Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
I want to mourn the old trees and tell them that we love them.
I've looked at clear cuts and burnt forest, and I felt outraged.
We are the crowning glory of God's creation, and all of nature was made for us. Nature is more productive because of us, not less.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
It's officially official. Redundantly, this is Wretched Radio, just in case I didn't already have suspicions as to what kind of a theological dork I am. It was confirmed on Tuesday when I visited G3 Ministries in Douglasville, Georgia. Ain't never been. I think it's west of the cities. It's on the way from Atlanta to Birmingham, and it is the home of the G3 conference, which is now actually held in downtown Atlanta, which, by the way, as long as I brought up the subject, if you're looking to go to the G3 conference, ain't no better deal than the one you are now going to hear about. Go to g3min.org. Check out all of the speakers, Paul Washer, Joel Beakey, etc., etc., etc. It's a magnificent, it's huge. I think they're anticipating 8,500 people attending the G3 conference. Wowza. And you can get a 30% discount. It's the best deal in town, I ain't kidding. Just simply type in promo code FORTIS. That is we. FORTIS, FORTIS, all caps. When you're checking out, you're going to get 30% off. And I've spent some time at their HQ, which is actually inside of Praise Mill Baptist Church, which, just in case everybody at Praise Mill Baptist Church didn't know, it's probably, no, I was going to say one of the worst church names ever, but then I started thinking about Revolution Church, Journey Church. How many times do you think that church played Don't Stop Believing? All of these current cool names that focus on us. It used to be about, for better or for worse, what they would call St. Matthew's Episcopal Church. Now it's Feast Church, the Incomparable You Church. Okay, I'm making that one up, but I wouldn't be surprised. Praise Mill Baptist Church in Douglasville. It's a big church, and it is also the home of G3 Ministries. And went to spend some time with them, did a podcast with them, and then sitting around the table, having what some would call, wrongly, God's chicken. That's Chick-fil-A for the uninitiated. All we did was geek out. That is all, just talking about the dorkiest stuff. And I thought to myself, oh, with the exception of Chick-fil-A, this is a taste of heaven. Because we know that if we're going to be sitting around talking theology, eating chicken sandwiches, it's going to be Zaxby's. The point is, it was delightful. And when I was done, I felt fed, not from Chick-fil-A, but spiritual nourishment. It was genuine, in its purest sense, it was Christian fellowship. I don't think we once talked politics and didn't even bring up the ridiculous Paula White and the Office of Faith inside of the White. Nothing. It was just all theology. And when I left, I was like, why do I just feel so good? It's because Christian fellowship is not getting together to watch the game. Now, that's sweet and that's fine, but it ain't nothing compared to genuine fellowship where the subject matter, the center of attention is Jesus Christ. And one of the subjects that we discussed with no small interest to me, especially having just read an article from ninemarks.org about church members voting on new church members. Does your church have a polity regarding new members? It most certainly does, even if it's not codified. They've got some sort of rule book that they follow. Even if unwritten, this is how we deal with new members. And it is a fascinating subject because, in my estimation, the Bible, I think it gives us everything we need to operate a church well, but it doesn't give us so much that there's no liberty amongst churches to noodle through some of these things and make different decisions based on different zip codes. It's brilliant in my estimation, because otherwise the Christian religion would be monolithic. Every church would be exactly the same. We'd all do the exact same thing. And, well, I guess that's not necessarily bad, different churches because of circumstances, giftings, resources. They got to do things differently. And so I think the Bible gives that sort of latitude. One of those subjects where I don't think anybody, no matter what their polity happens to be about church members, can definitively like bang the fist. This is exactly the way it needs to go. I think you can make some strong arguments, but I don't think you can be that fierce in your conclusion, because we see church membership sprinkled throughout the New Testament, starting in Acts chapter 2. Peter does some preaching. People get saved. What happens to them? They get saved. They get baptized. They get added to the church. Now, what was the timeline? Here's a theological conundrum for you. What is the connection, if any, between baptism and membership? Does somebody need to be baptized to be a member? Does somebody have to be a member to be baptized? Does getting baptized make you a member of the church? Is it a separate process? Wait a second, where in Acts chapter 2 does it say that there should be a process at all? Where does it say that there should be an examination by elders, which I believe is really wise, but it doesn't. Instead, it just tells us in an historical narrative section, this is what happened. And by the way, if I could suggest this little observational critique, I think it was, a week ago, we were talking about these university revivals that are supposedly taking place. I think another one with the football team just happened in Ohio. Nevertheless, what's happening is the one that Dalton went to and gave us a review on from the University of Kentucky, there was worship, there was some really bad teaching and preaching, and then there was a really, really good gospel presentation, and then they got baptized. And I overlooked something. The baptisms, should they be done in horse troughs on a football or basketball stadium floor in the back of Ryder truck rentals? Or should those baptisms take place in the context of a local church? Now you say the Ethiopian eunuch. Once again, we're dealing with an historical narrative. Where was the Ethiopian eunuch headed? Back home. He may well have been the first African believer. He was headed home. And he gets baptized. What? Hey, tell me, what do I need to do? There's some water, Philip. Dip me, dunk me, which would be more biblical. Immerse me, because I want to be obedient. And he did. But it wasn't done in the context of the church. Well, they were in the middle of nowhere. He wanted to be obedient, which is a really good reminder. If you are a born-again believer and you haven't been baptized, get on it. Do it. In fact, I think we're going to be adding another guarding of the table announcement before we do communion at Alpharetta Bible Church. If you haven't been baptized, you probably shouldn't be partaking of this meal, because baptism is a command. And if you're not willing to submit to that command, and that could even mean, all right, having heard that, I'm going to do it. Okay, that's fine. Then take the table. But baptism should precede Lord's Supper. Nevertheless, you see the Ethiopian eunuch getting baptized in the middle of nowhere, and then he goes back home to no church whatsoever. And so if I made a rule that said, well, he must get baptized in the context of his local church, A, he didn't have one, B, it would have meant that he had to have to go back to Jerusalem to be a part of that church. And so Philip baptized him. So I don't think that we see something that is, this is prescriptive. Either way, again, I think the brilliance of God in church polity is some of the wiggle room. But I would suggest this. The ideal place for baptism isn't a horse trough. It should be, if possible, done in the context of a local church. So if these rallies, I think, wanted to do up their game a bit, rather than preaching the gospel and doing an altar call, and then doing baptisms, how's about they say, here's the gospel. You need to respond right now, lest you die and be damned. Put your trust in Jesus Christ. If you've done that, get ready for this. Come up to the front, not to pray, not because it does anything, but because we're going to now connect you to a local church. Not going to baptize you, going to get you connected to a local church. And if you're born again, then you can be eager to get baptized in the context of your local church. Having said all of that, that brings us back to the subject du jour, which is also the subject of the day. It is delicious. I think I'll have it. Should members vote on new members? What is church polity regarding new members? How do they get added to the body? Now, it's going to depend, of course, on whether or not you are elder rule, elder led, or congregational, or a stripe in between those to determine church membership. But I'm thinking, and believe me, I'm thinking, because these are important issues for the life and health of the church. Right now at Alpharetta Bible Church, but we don't have the congregation vote on members. The elders, they interview them, and then they get added, they get presented to the body where we all affirm, yep, they're welcome here, and we will go about the business of walking alongside them, doing the one another's with them, praying for them, etc. But maybe, just maybe, there's not a biblical mandate, but more wisdom in having the congregation vote. What is that wisdom? Next on Wretched Radio.
What if you could strengthen your marriage in just minutes a day? Well, we're making that possible and easier than ever before, because now through the end of the month, we're giving away our resource Drive By Marriage completely free at FortisPlus.org. And also don't forget to pick up the study guide absolutely free as well. Drive By Marriage gives you 31 powerful bite-sized lessons that fit into your busy schedule. And with the study guide, you're going to get deeper insights and practical exercises to apply what you're learning. This complete marriage building package has helped couples grow closer to each other and closer to God. You're going to discover keys to better communication, biblical solutions for resolving conflict, and ways to build lasting trust and intimacy. Don't miss this opportunity. Visit FortisPlus.org now to get your free digital copy of Drive By Marriage and the study guide. Remember, the special offer ends at the end of the month. Head to FortisPlus.org right now. It's Drive By Marriage, because a few minutes a day can transform your marriage forever. FortisPlus.org.
Perhaps you've been wondering, is there a Christian university that isn't woke or that hasn't compromised on important biblical doctrines like, you know, the age of the earth? There is. It's the Masters University in Southern California. Beautiful campus. All of the athletics and activities that you've come to expect from universities. But it's more than that. The academic programs are most excellent, preparing students for the future. The Washington Post just said, number 6 for preparing students for the real world. All that. Plus, the Masters University isn't woke, and it is thoroughly biblical. Would you like to learn more? I encourage you to visit the Masters University at masters.edu/wretched, masters.edu/wretched.
Ever feel like you're watching the culture shift beneath your feet? Yeah, you're not alone, and you're not without allies either. At Fortis Institute, we've assembled a powerhouse team of biblical voices to help you navigate these challenging times. From Tim Challies to Brad Bigney to Adam Tyson and Greg Gifford, our fellows deliver daily content that transforms confusion into clarity. Whether you're tackling marriage challenges, parenting questions, or personal growth, Fortis Institute is ready with biblically grounded wisdom. We're not just offering commentary, we're providing a comprehensive toolkit for living boldly in an increasingly complex world. Through our daily podcasts and video content and live events, we're equipping believers to stand firm without wavering. And if you want to be part of something bigger, join the Fortis community today. Visit FortisInstitute.org and discover why thousands are turning to Fortis Institute as their trusted source for biblical wisdom. Because when the world seems to be turning upside down, we remain steadfast. It's Fortis Institute, where we're standing firm and standing together.
Important dates in Christian history. 1793. William Carey sails as a missionary to India. In the next 40 years, he would oversee more Bible translations than had previously been produced in all of Christian history. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
How did you become a member of your church? This is Wretched Radio. You say, well, I did what they asked. Okay, fair enough. But the question is, what did they ask? And who should do the asking? And who should do the affirming? Let's all make sure that we understand the subject at hand is not one that should cause division. I believe that different churches are going to have, they already do have different church polity. And what about one of the last things in the world that I would want to divide from another group of genuine believers is whether or not the congregation votes on elders. Did they get presented? Did they get affirmed? Do the elders do it? Or do you just show up a few times and you're a member? I would not break fellowship over that. Nevertheless, it is a subject worthy of our consideration because while I did not agree with everything that Jonathan Lehman wrote in his book, Don't Fire Your Congregation, the title alone is worthy of our consideration. Don't fire your congregation. Question, who should be doing the majority of work in the local church? In the West, because of our zip code, we do it a little differently here. The kind of the assumption is, well, it's the senior pastor or it's the pastor that we pay. And then there's the other elders too. But basically that's his job. Now that isn't everybody, of course, but that's a lot of, I would say, evangelical Christianity in the West. But that's not what the Bible says about who should be doing the heavy lifting in the church. The work of the church should be done by the church. Yes, the elders are a part of the church, most certainly, but the body, if you will, those that don't hold that office, they are the ones who are to be equipped and trained in the work of the ministry by the elders, who then can say, my job here is through, because that is the job description. Yeah, preaching, teaching, rebuking, exhorting, all of those things, of course. But when it comes to doing the work of the church, it should be the elders' job to teach how, to encourage involvement, to equip them to do the work of the church. And maybe, just maybe, and I'm not being critical of any church in the way that they do their business of adding members, etc., but maybe, just maybe, the way that we go about church membership is kind of firing the congregation. It doesn't seek their involvement. I think we've shared this before, for whatever it's worth. My understanding, my thinking about church polity is that the elders should lead. But that does not mean that the congregation is not involved. I think that there are certain wisdom issues. See, one of the strongest arguments for congregational involvement in any sort of church functioning, I think, is the category of wisdom, that it's just plain dumb to not involve the congregation. Why wouldn't you ask these people who actually have Bibles? In fact, if you're in a good church, they have MacArthur Study Bibles. They know stuff. Why wouldn't you want to tap into that? Now, does that mean everything? No. But it does mean things that I think are very personal that affect the congregation, like finances, budgets, spending. That the elders, they don't keep the books closed. They open them up and say, please, we want you to affirm this is how we believe the money should be spent this year. Please vote. And then they've got a little wiggle room in there. There may be some of the funds are fungible, but they can't go out and buy a new building without congregational involvement. Why? Well, because it's lacking wisdom and it involves them. They're going to have to go to church in that building. Their gifts are going to go to the supporting of that building. Why wouldn't you want them involved in the decision-making process? I think calling a pastor would be another, but is it possible a third would be voting for new members? Let me share with you from 9 Marks Ministries. This is 9, the number 9, marks.org. Based on a number of verses, we see congregational involvement when it comes to the issue of, I'll put it this way, just for the context that we're currently in, terminating membership. That's church discipline. The congregation is involved in saying, we vote this person needs to be set outside of this local body. So the question then would be, should the congregation also have the responsibility to vote on bringing them through the front door, not just kicking them out the back door, but bringing them in? Should they be a part of the door? You see the church discipline, of course, Matthew 18, 15 through 20, 1 Corinthians 5. You see this issue of authority given to the congregation. The kingdom of the keys are given to you. In other words, the congregation, now it's limited, but it has some responsibility and has some authority. What are the kingdom of the keys pertaining to? What does it unlock? What are you guarding with those keys? And the answer would be theology and making sure that there's nobody inside of the body that would give a black eye to your congregation and besmirch the name of Jesus Christ. So church discipline and guarding doctrine, that's every member's job. And that's based on the keys of the kingdom. I'm not sure how much evangelicals, we tend to talk about that subject. It seems to have gotten buried in Protestant history. It shouldn't. The priesthood of all believers, the keys of the kingdom, those are glorious doctrines that we should be talking about. Back to 9 Marks. Voting on members protects the church's gospel witness to the world. If someone is nominated for membership by the elders, then the congregation should ordinarily trust that a thorough orientation of the church's beliefs and an elder interview has happened. This, by the way, this is a tangent, related, but a tangent. How much teaching do you need to do before you allow somebody to be a new member? How much sin might you observe in their life before you would go, we got a problem here? Or what is the philosophy of your church when it comes to membership? Is it, we just want people to be members, they'll be underneath the authority of the church, and we'll work with them? Or is the philosophy, no, we don't want to let scoundrels in, so we're going to be much more thorough? I think there's certainly plenty of room for varying emphases in different congregations. Off of the tangent, back to the text of the 9 Marks article. So the elders say, hey, we've vetted these guys. We've talked to them. They understand who we are, because I think any sort of interviewing process, it is a two-way street. We want to get to know you, and you should get to know us, because we don't want you to be just surprised when we start talking about you can't lose your salvation. Wait, well, what? You teach what here? I think we should know those things going in to avoid any problems down the road. Now, how that gets handled, different subject, but I think it's wise that those things are shared. So the elders say, yep, we're good to go, congregation. We present them to you. In general, the congregation's going to go, cool. But what if someone in the congregation knows that person? They work with that person and they know about some unrepentant sin. Should that be ever considered or brought up? I know of a church where the individual who is looking to become a member of the church, I can't remember exactly, but it's X number of months they have to live amongst the body so that the body can rub shoulders with them. How often are they showing up for church? Do they serve? Are they is there anything wonky going on? Then they vote. Again, I think there's lots of room for different takes on how different churches do this, but it's for the protection of the body. That's the point in this 9 Marks article. It protects the church's gospel witness to the world. Quote, a member's authority to object to a membership candidate safeguards against bringing an unbeliever into membership who could damage the reputation of the church in Christ. That you maybe keep a wolf in sheep's clothing out of your church. Voting on members chooses who will watch over your life for gospel faithfulness. You say, I don't think that I understood that sentence. We're to be looking out for one another. Once again, the kingdom of the keys, the priesthood of all believers. We want to make sure that everybody in the body is thinking rightly about Scripture. You have that responsibility to me, and I have it to you. Elder office aside, for one another, we're to protect one another. We're to be looking out for one another, guarding one another, helping, pointing out, rebuking, exhorting. You want to let just anybody do that? Conclusion from 9 Marks. Careful votes for new members will help preserve the gospel in your own life. When someone is voted into membership, they're receiving the authority to carry out God-given responsibilities. Would I say it's a law that you got to do it this way or that way? I don't think that I have the authority to do that. But maybe, just maybe, we should be considering, how do we go about the business of church membership, and why? That was the geeky conversation I had at G3. I won't even get into the geeky conversation we had about the hypostatic union of Jesus Christ and the mingling of the two natures, but it was totally delightful. If you plan on going to the G3 conference, visit g3min.org. Fortis, capital F, capital O, capital R, capital D-I-S, Fortis, will get you 30% off. This is Wretched Radio.